and welcome to NSTA The Bus Stop. This is the official podcast of the National School Transportation Association. And as you know, we're on the final countdown to our NSTA midwinter meeting in Safety Harbor, Florida. Just want to remind folks, we have two NSTA The Bus Stop live podcasts, which you're going to hear next week. One with our good friend Antonio Civitella, CEO of Transfinder. And then we also have Ken Rentner, a good friend from Tyler Technologies, booked next week live from the midwinter meeting. And we're going to deploy both those podcasts next week. NSTA live, The Bus Stop at the midwinter meeting. So be on the lookout for both of those podcasts next week. Now, at the bus stop this week, we're happy to bring back another good friend to NSTA, Charlie Hood, Executive Director of NASDIPS. So, Charlie, welcome back to the bus stop.
Thank you, Kurt. Great to be with you and your listeners.
Well, it's our pleasure having you back again. As we talk about, one of my favorite things on the podcast is to get you to actually spell out the acronym of NASDIPS for our listeners and give them a brief sketch of what you guys do.
All right. Well, it's always entertaining trying to pronounce it properly because I tend to say people when I mean to say pupil, but we are the National Association of State Directors of Pupil Transportation Services. Agreed that it's a long acronym. We're an association that's been in place since 1968, about 52, 53 years now, and our primary membership is state directors of student transportation, the people at the various state agencies, mostly departments of education, but in some cases, departments of motor vehicles or highway safety or transportation, sometimes highway patrol, who are sort of the leadership agencies for student transportation within their respective states. All 50 states plus DC and one territory, at least, are members, is our primary membership category. But we also have equal membership categories for school bus suppliers, both the original equipment manufacturers and all the component suppliers for the hardware, as well as software suppliers like the ones you mentioned, Transfinder, Tyler Tech, et cetera. So with the State National Associations Council is also part of our membership. That's state association leaders, people who are the executive leadership of the various state pupil transportation associations. And then we have sort of a catch-all category for people who just don't fit anywhere else. But anybody that's interested in student transportation, like your organization, is welcome to become a member.
Yeah, we certainly have a place for them and definitely, you know, appreciate all their support and input on the various issues. Now, one of the reasons why we're having you on the podcast is that we have a big announcement from you, Charlie. So for folks who don't know, I'm going to leave it to you to tell them what's going on. And, you know, give some information, you know, to them, you know, about your future plan.
Well, thanks, Kurt. Well, I presume you're referring to the fact that that I am retiring as executive director effective March 31st. So it's bittersweet for me, for sure. I've been serving since July 1 of 2014 as the NASDIPS executive director. And of course, I had a 30 plus year career before that, as the final 24 of which were with the State Department of Education in Tallahassee and for Florida as Florida's state director of transportation. So state director of pupil transportation, that is. So it's been a very rewarding career. I don't anticipate a lot of changes with respect to NASDIPS, except that I hope there will be some improvements. There's always an opportunity when you have a changing of the guard to bring in some new ideas, some new leadership. And I think that NASDIPS has been doing a good job, but we're always open to new ideas, and I think it'll be refreshing to have some new approaches. So personally, I don't have any future plans regarding student transportation. I'm at the age where I'm looking forward to having a little more time where I am not answering emails and so on and so forth all day. But my heart is still in it, and I definitely bleed yellow like all of your listeners. They all know, you all know, that it gets in your blood. Yes, school bus transportation has been an extremely rewarding career. That's why I've done it for 38 plus years. And I look forward to continuing to be involved with any kind of volunteer work that I can do in that regard. I don't plan to do any paid consulting or contracting of that type, but certainly always going to be available to NASDIPS and to the other organizations to help in any way that I can moving forward. Just not full time all day, every day. So I know my wife Del and I are definitely looking forward to doing some traveling when the pandemic allows. We've always loved to travel. We're kind of foodies, so we like to, that gives us an excuse to not have to cook at home and to go out and find adventurous cuisine wherever we are. And we try to stay real active. We hike a lot. We fish, I guess, are my primary activity. You know, everybody always says, are you going to golf for the rest of your life? Well, no, but I might be fishing for the rest of my life, Lord willing. So
I think we leave the fishing up. The golfing up to Steve Simmons.
Yeah, there you go.
You could take care of the fishing end of things.
Yeah, well, I shouldn't admit this in public, but I have literally never picked up a golf club. So you do not want to see me on the golf course holding everybody up.
That's great. So we definitely wish you well, in your retirement. You know, obviously hope to see you, still active in some capacity. If I were to say to you, Charlie, you mentioned your 38-year career, what is the one thing that stands out to you as you reflect, on your time formally in the yellow bus industry?
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, I could pick out any number of program areas or things that we're proud of, like when I was state director in Florida, one of the marquee programs that we did there that not a lot of states do is we ran the volume purchasing school bus bid, through which all the school districts in the state buy their school buses. And in fact, the contractors within this, which now there are two school districts out of the 67 that are primarily contracted, they used to buy some of their buses from us, from our bid too. But at any rate, that was a successful thing that we did. And the transition to commercial driver licensing back in 1990, 91, and all the programs and procedures that we had to put in place to provide for that, which also included, as far as I know, a first of its kind statewide pool purchasing program for drug and alcohol testing services, which most of the school districts still use to this day. It's voluntary. They don't have to use the state arranged bidder service supplier, but they do because it's they're competitive and they do a good job, and they've had a good track record there with that. Things of that nature, I guess I'm most proud of the things, and what I would consider the greatest accomplishment are the kinds of things that lend themselves to multiple school districts or contractors not having to reinvent the wheel, that lend themselves to some degree of centralization, like school bus purchasing and specifications, or drug and alcohol testing services for drivers, commercial driver licensing, testing and certification. Some of those things are where we felt like we were of most value, with the understanding that local school districts are always the ones, and contractors are always the ones that get the job done on a day-to-day basis. I mean, school bus drivers and technicians are my heroes, because without them, all of us who are in supervisory or leadership positions would be sunk. We wouldn't have a reason to come to work. So
we'd be fishing a lot earlier than at retirement, if that was the case, to your point.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially now in the last year or two, when there have been so many volunteerism kinds of effort and extraordinary efforts by drivers and other essential workers to pick up the slack during the pandemic and do things like deliver meals and drive their buses out into communities and sit there and serve as Wi-Fi hotspots or whatever it might be. There's just been a lot of above and beyond that's been going on in the last year. And it shows the character of the profession, as well as of the American society and its people in general.
Yeah, and probably one area where we've seen the industry come together is throughout the pandemic to really close ranks and support student transportation fully. As you reflect too, are there any areas where you say, hey, I may be retiring from day to day, but down the road, I'd love to see this occur with respect to the industry?
Yeah, I'd say one, and this is, not everybody will agree with this because different people have different philosophies or ideas about the role of the federal government, for instance, and how expansive it should be. But I certainly would like to see more standardization of basic best practices that we all agree in, that nearly all of us, all the different service providers around the country are doing in student transportation. like, for instance, uniform high standards for school bus drivers, some form of a standardized way of ensuring that a driver applicant has no criminal history background, not just within the individual locale or the state, but nationwide, so that a hiring entity can say, okay, that school bus driver, you know, doesn't have a criminal background history. And obviously we already have that now, or just now starting to have that with respect to the drug and alcohol clearinghouse ensure that people don't have a history of drug and alcohol violations. But even perhaps someday things with respect to some of the basic aspects of procedures and training, like, for instance, a standardized crossing procedure or standardized model or uniform laws for when motorists have to stop for school buses. I mean, that's one that just cries out to me for national standardization. Why should we have to worry in my home state, for instance, where we have a lot of people from all over, including other countries, why should we have to worry that even the people from the United States might not know they're supposed to stop for a school bus on a five-lane highway divided by only a paved suicide lane or a two-way turn lane.
Right.
That kind of thing. It's just...
Yeah, hard to believe, yeah.
The variations among the laws in the states. And I know NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is working to assess motorist comprehension of their own state laws and to put some of that together as a starting point. But I would look forward to seeing that kind of a uniformity one day, without taking away local control of education and all the things that have made public education in the United States successful to begin with.
Yeah, that's one of the tricks, is to do the things you're talking about with still maintaining that local control. Although, you know, one of the NSTA national initiatives, the Stop for School Buses Act, does provide a jumping off point for a lot of things that you're talking about, including surveying, you know, all 50 states to see exactly what's on the docket with respect to, you know, the individual state laws, you know, some of these issues that you talked about. But yeah, I think you're right. I also think that, you know, some of the best practices too come in from basically non-regulatory body, and that's NTSB, you know, in their various, you know, crash investigations. So yeah, it is an area where some streamlining, you know, would definitely, you know, be helpful back to both the people executing the transportation as well as motorists too. Although it's hard to believe that anybody in this day and age would not stop for a school bus, you know, with lights on and stop arm. But we see it happen.
Yeah, as you know, annual surveys that we did for 9 years before last year, when school buses weren't operating during the spring survey period, we had an average of 80,000 to 90,000 illegal passes in a single snapshot day among the 20+% of the nation's school bus drivers that reported to the survey. So it's $17 million or more a year when you extrapolate it out, just among the drivers who participated in the survey, not including the other almost 80% of the nation's school bus drivers that didn't report to the survey.
Right. Yeah. And with respect to that survey, because you would be in the, you know, stages of deploying that survey, you know, has NASDIPS made a decision on what they're going to do in 2021? I did see a survey come across my desk from Burbio, which they deploy each Monday, that said we're still about 35% of the, you know, school districts out there in virtual only mode. So are you guys going to try to do something in the spring, or would you try to bounce it to the fall? Or once again, is it something that's going to be impossible to execute this year?
My prognostication, although this isn't a board decision, the board hasn't made a decision on it yet. We have been talking about it, but my idea of what probably is going to happen is that we would defer to the fall for the reason you cited, which is that we don't really have a representative, the full representative sample of school buses out there running around every day with the various hybrid systems and with the fully virtuals, with so many students being fully virtual still. So until things get relatively back to normal in terms of exposure and the number of buses out there on the road, we want to have the ability to do chronological analysis over the years of the survey. And this would kind of throw a wrench in that works if we don't have as many school buses running as we normally do.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to pivot a little bit to the American School Bus Council. Normally, I would see you in person this month at some point. I think it was probably pretty close to a year ago, maybe a year ago plus 1 week. We were in Orlando, Florida for Love the Bus. Obviously, can't execute that this year, but we're, you know, through the ASBC doing something for Love the Bus. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that and how it came about?
Well, Love the Bus was conceived, I don't even remember the first year, but it's been in place, I think, at least 10 years. But Love the Bus was conceived as a way to focus attention of not just people within the school bus industry, but also parents and policymakers, legislators, on the job that school buses do every day and their importance. As you know well, Kurt, the three pillars of ASBC's messaging are that school buses are by far the safest mode of transportation, number one. Number two, they are also the most environmentally responsible way to get kids to and from school because they replace an estimated 36 cars that would otherwise be transporting the same number of students morning and afternoon. And thirdly, and maybe most importantly, particularly in light of all the pandemic-related issues we're seeing lately with difficulty of accessing education, particularly by students who may come from backgrounds where they have more limited transportation options, school buses get kids to, you know, equitably to school programs. So that's those three things, you know, the safety, environmental responsibility, and equity of access to education are critical. And that's what American School Bus Council has done such a good job with in February, Love the Bus being sort of a central focal point that allows us to celebrate and to recognize the efforts of school bus drivers and give them a little love during the month of love.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, had to kind of pivot to a virtual type atmosphere, but still want to keep the, you know, thrust of the program moving forward with, you know, respect to encouraging school bus ridership. And so, you know, look forward to the days when we're getting back, you know, to more kind of robust activity in that respect. You know, as time is running short here, Charlie, you know, we could go on for a long time and talking about, you know, the industry and, you know, a lot of the work that we've done together, not the least of which we're not even going to touch upon in this podcast, and that's the STARTS, you know, task force report. But, you know, as you reflect, you know, on all your years of service in a few different capacities, if you could give us a thumbnail sketch of what you view the future of the industry to be, because I know that's a topic, heavy, heavy topic of conversation, especially lately, especially with the pandemic and causing, you know, disruptions, and really took an industry that was predictable and stable, and you kind of removed two really, you know, core elements from it. So, you know, as you reflect, you know, what do you see the future of the yellow bus to be?
I'm optimistic about the continued need for school bus transportation for the reasons that we've already discussed and are well known, you know, primarily the safety, but also the other aspects. I think that I would say there are two kind of big ticket things that I see being the future of student transportation among all the ongoing needs with driver training and qualifications and the day-to-day stuff. The sort of the newer big ticket items that I would see are increasing use of technology. I mean, obviously video surveillance technology on buses is ubiquitous now or close to ubiquitous, but the newer technologies, automatic vehicle locating through GPS technologies, student tracking, some of the parent notification apps and services that are out there now. I think accountability is in transportation is what's driving those things. Today's parents expect a higher level of service, real-time information, and accountability than parents of my generation did, or even the generation behind me. But the technologies that are out there now for things, you know, we're starting to see as a result of the pandemic, if there's an upside to the pandemic, it is causing us to look at some new ideas, things like, you know, the contact tracing that sometimes has to go on if there is a need for that. Obviously much easier when you're doing student tracking and you know who's on your bus, when they were on there, and with whom. Things that fortunately only sometimes become obvious when there's a crash or some other need, but the pandemic has brought out that need. So all the technology solutions that we're starting to see accelerate right now, in part in response to the pandemic, as technology improves and continues to get less expensive with economies of scale and so on, I think that's going to be a big, big trend. And I guess the other thing would be electrification, the trend toward electric school buses. You know, understanding that electric school bus technology is not fully there yet in terms of cost efficiency, I certainly think that the future is going to hold a lot more propagation of electric school buses as and the manufacturers who do all these prognostications as part of their marketing are in part where I get this information. There's all the original equipment manufacturers, Bluebird, Thomas, Navistar, IC, are saying that it's going to be that the electric school buses are going to be a much bigger part of the mix going forward, and maybe eventually the biggest part of the mix. Diesel has served us well, but there are a lot of factors driving that you're listeners are probably already familiar with. And as more and more grants become available, as battery technology improves, I think that's going to be the way of the future.
Well, Charlie, I thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us at NSTA The Bus Stop. Wish you the best of luck in retirement. Hopefully, we'll still see you, around to a lesser extent, because we want you to focus on becoming that championship fisherman. That would be our good thoughts for your retirement, that we see you on ESPN and say, hey, we knew that guy when.
I think my fishing to catching ratio is too high for me to achieve that status, but thank you.
all in jest, but really do wish you all the best. Want to make sure that you keep in touch with us and, give you and Della, great thoughts and wish you, peace and happiness as you undertake this next, area of your life. But from a personal level, thank you so much for your support as I kind of made my way in and around the industry these first couple of years. I appreciate all you've done for me personally, and the organization does as well. So thank you, Charlie. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Kurt. Thanks so much. I appreciate working with NSTA and you and all your predecessors as well. It's been a great career.